Hello, my name is Brian Novoselsky, and welcome to the Over the Counter Podcast. Today we're joined by Kevin Day, Managing Network Facilitator at CPESN Ohio and President of Day's Pharmacy in Glendale, Ohio. Welcome and thank you so much for joining me today, Kevin.
Thanks, Brian. Excited to be here.
So today we're going to be discussing a recently announced partnership between Humana Healthy Horizons in Ohio and CPESN USA, known as the Pharmacist Quality Rewards Program, expanding access to care throughout Ohio. So, Kevin, to start us off talking about this initiative, can you basically just explain what the Pharmacist Quality Rewards Program is and what community need it was really designed to address?
Yeah, sure. So this is a program that we've worked closely with the Humana Healthy Horizons team, which is Humana's Medicaid team in Ohio, for, gosh, almost 2 years to be able to pull this to market. And really what we're trying to do is allow our pharmacy partners that participate in CPSN Ohio to practice as best they can and as best they know how to take care of their patients in their communities. Really, in that face-to-face is good and important, and really the community connection is good and important and valuable. And pharmacists can and should be treated like provider groups. So those are the kind of pieces that we pulled together here. So the model is similar to how Humana does quality-based and value-based programs with other provider groups. Actually started with a template of this is what is proposed to primary care groups. I said, all right, seems like a good place to start as any, right? They've been doing that for a long time and able to pull those through. Patients are attributed to the pharmacies and attached to them, assigned to them with the task of improve their health, right? And do what you can to make that work. As far as the needs that we're trying to solve is the same as other places, right? We're in two big chronic disease states, and diabetes and hypertension as the two drivers or two of the biggest drivers of cost and morbidity and mortality across the country. And certainly in the Medicaid space, really tricky patient populations in that chronic disease space to be able to keep them engaged in care and follow up and those kinds of things, because social drivers of health play such a big role in that space. They do everywhere, but it can often be concentrated in the Medicaid population. So empowering pharmacists to do what they do best, which is connect with their people and take good care of them, and then shooting for this scenario where incentives get aligned from top to bottom, right? So if for us to succeed, the plans metrics are better, which they care about, right? The pharmacies have better results with their patients, which they care about. The patients have better results in clinical things that they care about, right? Everybody wins for us to get to the end of the road here in success. That doesn't happen very often. It's something we're really excited about, is a scenario where incentives actually get aligned from the plan and even above Humana, right? Ohio Medicaid wins, right? And from a cost perspective, and taxpayers win from a cost perspective all the way down and through if we're successful here.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that was perfectly said. I think it, in some respects, like, it can seem simple, just like getting people on the same page and driving those value-based outcomes. But at the end of the day, like, it's what needs to happen with this ever expanding or evolving healthcare landscape. And really, like you said, touching on all aspects of the like care continuums. Awesome. Excited to dive into this. So you mentioned hypertension and diabetes. Wanted to kind of focus on that and then expand it a little bit, and you mentioned this, but maybe dive a little bit deeper into kind of why did program leaders decide to focus specifically on hypertension and diabetes, and maybe what future avenues do you think the program can extend to regarding additional disease states?
Yeah. So we started with hypertension and diabetes for a couple of reasons. One being the number of lives impacted. Humana's Medicaid plan in Ohio isn't that big. They started in Ohio as part of the Next Gen Ohio Medicaid program, and they were new. They won a new bid. So the number of lives just isn't that big, period. Then the number of lives that go to CPSN pharmacies gets pretty small. So we needed to pick disease states that had a lot of penetrance, I guess, through that overlap so that we could move needles that actually mattered. So one was, why not take on the big problems and not try to shoot for small things? But two is to create data that mattered and could tell the story. We had to make sure we had enough people. So that's, I think, probably the right reasons to get to that spot, both from the pharmacy network side. Like, we were interested in these. We think pharmacies are comfortable with these things. It's something we do every day, as compared to some conversations that we had, right? There was conversations in the opioid space, behavioral health, like, we spend a lot of time and effort trying to figure out about pharmacies doing PHQ2s and 2-9s in the pharmacy setting, like at point of service. That ended up not being a billable service in Ohio right now, which really was the thing that derailed that. But that was a little intimidating, right? Not something that I don't think we can do, but that'd be a big stretch for pharmacies. Whereas working in the diabetes and blood pressure space is a space where every pharmacist, I think, feels a moderate degree of confidence here, which really empowers us to feel confident about getting results back to the plan.
Awesome. Yeah, perfectly said. Yeah, it's obviously so many disease states that pharmacies and pharmacists are like observing on a day to day. But like you said, like these are the biggest patient pools that kind of need that oversight and pharmacist attention to address those outcomes. Cool. So just like talking about how it's going right now, can you share with us some real world experiences highlighting early successes of the program?
Yeah, sure. We're excited to have some already rolling. So the process is that Humana is identifying patients, or they have the HEDIS engine. So the metrics that we're measuring on are three of the major HEDIS metrics. We didn't create anything from scratch. We're just following what happens across the world in the quality space. So they have their HEDIS machine, is at least the way I think about it, where effectively it's spitting out of all of their members and what measures apply to them. And then is it an open gap or not? I mean, they're marrying that to dispensing data. In Ohio, dispensing is carved out with a single PBM. So Humana doesn't actually have, that's not their data, right? They're pulling that from the single PBM to connect and create lists for our pharmacies of, these are your patients. Again, they're attributed to you based on dispensing that in Humana are part of this HEDIS gap machine. We're just feeding that then to the pharmacies in secure ways where we can say, look, like this person who you know has this open gap, which you might not know that. So we're still in that space, and it's something you talk about future state. I think the thing that we will likely see and be working towards in a broad way, both in Ohio and across the country, is where we do the expectation that pharmacies know if their patients are at goal or not for things like diabetes and blood pressure, right? We're not happening a ton, but starting to get there. With that kind of framework, is we're providing that information to the pharmacies. And there have been several stories where pharmacists have called us to say, hey, I was looking at that Humana list and I had no idea that fill in the blank was an uncontrolled diabetic. And it totally changed the conversation that we had with her, because she's on low level therapy. It looks like a nice, easy, normal case, but apparently her A1C is higher than 8, because that's what Humana says, right? And it's opened those doors to those next level conversations and then collaborations, right? So a lot of that, again, especially in this space, is the pharmacist's role is to connect with the rest of the team, right? So we don't have collective practice agreements in most of the pharmacies. We're not writing prescriptions. We're not changing doses. We're playing that role of understanding what the patient's telling us, using the data sources that we have available to us, which again, in this case, is a Humana-generated patient list with a gap open or not. Maybe some pharmacies in Ohio have like Epic access or health information exchange access, so they can pull some of that data down. But then we're going to the team and saying, hey, like this person was just here and their A1C is apparently pushing 9 and they're still on just metformin, right? We talk about how we can intensify this therapy and be able to push that forward. So that's been, again, I have 5 pharmacies, I think, who have sent me basically the same message of knowing that this person has a gap is totally changing the way that we interact with them. So it's really that awareness and that first space. And then pharmacies have a real goal to work towards, which is fun too, and like a reason to work towards it. That's been helpful. It almost gamify a little bit of, let's make progress on these patients and work on them longitudinally, right? It's all about like a long-term process. This is a marathon, not a sprint to get healthier, but really working on patients with patients to be able to achieve those goals. Yeah, it's been fun. I don't know if I have any of someone did it yet. One of the first patients that I heard about has anyone see like close to 12. So like they might not get to goal this year, and that's okay, reasonable. But I think with that team now activated to really start to pay attention and to do consistent follow-up, is they set up a whole plan already of like how we want to approach this. And I don't know if it gets all the way to 8 by the end of the year. That's pretty aggressive, but quite likely that person gets healthier in 2026 because of this. And again, it starts with the incentive right on the top that the pharmacy has. The program space enables it. We have a provider status arrangement with Humana as well, so the pharmacist can bill for the services that they provide. So it's a nice, sustainable, stable way to do it with that kind of gamified incentive in the value-based program to say, oh, let's go get it. Go chase the goals and I'll get it done, which has been great for the pharmacists.
Awesome. Yeah, that was perfectly said. I think it's awesome from my perspective to see kind of groups, partnerships really getting together and going after, being proactively energized to really address these outcomes. And it may not be like on a national worldwide scale, seeing this happen in your communities and people coming together and for potential for that to grow, expand into other places within the world. It's definitely on the right track and definitely aligned with where the community really wants to see themselves drive outcomes as providers now. Definitely very refreshing, awesome to see. Hopefully the success only continues and grows. I wanted to just talk about value-based care a little bit specifically, and then sure, Just wrap the bow up and talk about the future, I guess you could say. But what is so unique about value-based care initiatives like this one, and why do you think they're continuing to rise in prominence within the pharmacy industry?
Yeah. There's an interesting answer to that, right? Because there's an almost tongue-in-cheek way to answer the question that I think is at least partially true, right? The reason why these are growing is because the federal government says these shall grow. And in that we still live in this world where we all follow what Medicare says, right? I remember when I was in DC, President Obama had laid out like a vision and a goal that something like 50% of Medicare payments they wanted tied to a value-based arrangement as early as, I want to say, 2014 or 15. And that number like expected to grow to 80% like in the late 20 teens kind of time frame. It's the world we live in. The right answer to this question, Brian, is this is how healthcare works now, is things get tied to value. Period. And for if pharmacies and pharmacists want to be providers and be part of the team and be treated in this way, we have to be comfortable in this and fluent in this and be able to understand kind of what this looks like. We've talked for 15 years now in pharmacy worlds about pharmacist provider status in Medicare. Many states have that now in Medicaid. There's lots of opportunities in the commercial space where pharmacists can bill for services. What has been though is be able to bill for services. Really, where that is now is play in the value-based arenas and have things at risk and what that looks like. I don't think there's any way where this isn't part of the future where value-based arrangements are getting applied to what we're doing. And I don't think anybody should want anything different. That's maybe personal opinion, and then I could probably have an argument other directions. There is actually a moderate amount of evidence that a lot of the big looked at as successful value-based programs haven't really moved the needle very much on things like total cost of care. That said, I have a hard time believing that it's not a future state that we're going to figure out as a country, as a world, as really big healthcare teams. And I think it comes really back to that. Are we providing aligned care where incentives are actually aligned all the way through? So there have been, because they were easy to measure, some value-based care programs across lots of places where the thing that was being measured was like some process kind of measure, right? It was measurable. So we measured it and it got better because it was able to get better. And there's whatever that rule is, that whatever gets measured gets better, right? Or gets improved on. But if it wasn't all the way aligned through to a true patient outcome, it may not move the needle, right? So getting to these kinds of arrangements where the outcome is a solid clinical measure, it still isn't the end all be all. Have A1C under 8, like somebody goes from 8.1 to 7.9, not a lot has changed. But if we talk about this person who started this program at 12, if they get all the way down to 7.7, like that would be great. And I don't think it's arguable that they would be in a better space. That, I guess that's my best answer here, is this is coming regardless, and how we are preparing for it and thinking about it and understanding our position on these broader teams and positioning ourselves on these broader teams to be able to participate is really where the future is going to be for that space.
I really appreciate that. I think it's good to see like action in motion within these spaces, especially with the pharmacists tackling these gaps, like you had said. But I just wanted to look toward the future and how this can be applied community-wide within pharmacy. So whether it be shifting the focus to value-based care or seeking out new partnerships within their communities, how do you envision initiatives like the Pharmacist Quality Rewards Program to encourage other pharmacies or pharmacy professionals to enhance clinical services or business models?
Yeah, I guess I'm hopeful, and people who know me well know I'm a pretty hopeful kind of person. This comes out for me a lot of that maybe this is part of a program that really starts to change how healthcare works and how pharmacy works in general. So what we've laid out right now for this particular program, these are Ohio Medicaid patients. So the dispensing side in the pharmacy is stable. We get paid in a cost plus model that works. It's not going to get anybody really that rich, but it also isn't going to put pharmacies out of business. So we have sustainability on dispensing. Yes, we should celebrate that. Because of the provider status piece, we have the ability to bill for enhanced services. So if you're a pharmacist and a team and a company that wants to go above and beyond and do care management and other kind of work in your pharmacy, you have the ability to bill for that. And that's, again, makes those sustainable. So traditionally, pharmacies who wanted to go above and beyond were giving that stuff away or trying to charge patients for it. But now, like, we have that space becomes, again, sustainable. It's not zero how Medicaid rates, right? You're not getting rich on them. And it's 85% of the fee schedule right now in Ohio for pharmacists, but it adds a sustainability piece. And then with a value-based care kind of cherry on top, is it's a framework that I feel, and certainly this has been resounding as we talked about it internally and across the state, is this feels like a framework that can work and can scale. And what has to change for the future, right, for this to be really successful is the charity's got to get a lot bigger, right? Which means we need a lot more people involved. The challenge for us as a network is to perform this year and then probably not can try to convince some Humana to get bigger. It doesn't make as much sense as it does to convince other Medicaid plans to start to play in this space, both in Ohio and then across the country. So that scenario is dispensing's fair. There's sustainability and process and ability to pay for services, and the best pharmacies get rewarded, right? So right now, not this is a negative, it's just how the incentives work, right? It is the biggest pharmacies make money, right? Make the most money because they buy the best, they can drive efficiencies of scale, like all of that. Whether that's your big chains, your big grocers, your big mail orders, or your big independents, right? There's plenty of really big independents that are pushing volume and making really good money. And it's good for them, right? They can do lots of things in the community. Many of them are reinvesting and doing amazing work, and we shouldn't dismiss that. What isn't tied together into that, though, is that the best pharmacies like really having the opportunity, right? Almost on size. So I'm hopeful, this is where the hope comes in, that a program like this, if it scales and expands, where it's not really gameable, right? Getting someone's A1C to goal requires work, right? It requires good communication, requires trust, requires cultural competence, requires all of this kind of back-end effort of the team to get someone's to goal. That if pharmacy A gets 80% of their patients' diabetes under control, and pharmacy B only gets 40%. Good. That pharmacy A should get rewarded again in a real way. Wouldn't it be great if it was thousands and thousands of dollars for that to potentially happen? That's the mindset and framework and kind of thought process that we're bringing to this particular program that we bring to the value-based care programs in general. And then it should be able to scale across all disease states. That's a big piece of my, say, frustration is most of the, and I'm going to call it still early, even though they're 15 years old, kind of value-based care programs that are based on adherence to statins and adherence to ACEs and ARBs. Like, cool. How do we figure out how to do adherence and success with Zoloft? Again, it comes back to the PHQ-9s. How do we work in what's totally changing the world right now with SGLT2 inhibitors and GLP-1s, right? Like, the drugs are moving so quickly, it's hard to build value-based care programs that follow. But if you stay on big outcomes, I think we can. And how do we all play in that role? So we can't do it as small pharmacies. The network role is a must at some level, whether it's CPSN or not, doesn't really matter. But the recognition of it doesn't matter if my pharmacy happens to be the best at anything, right? Because I'm a single location in suburbia Cincinnati, right? Two locations. But like, I can't move anybody's needles in any real way. So coming together, playing together in that sandbox and be able to move needles together, I think is really where that future comes. And really continuing to challenge it of if once or if we get sustainability on the bottom, on the dispensing piece, again, we're starting to make some real progress both in Ohio and across the country. We can actually start to build towards other things where we're key parts of people's healthcare teams and really taking care of people's goals, helping them towards their goals for a healthier life, right? And that's what we all want to be doing. Let's set up some systems that can actually help us get there. This, hopefully, this program is maybe step one for us in Ohio and maybe a big step for others to mimic and copy and learn from. Obviously, we don't know. We're early, right? So we'll see what this looks like. But we're pretty confident that we have a real chance to make a difference in people's lives and meet the metrics laid out, certainly in the program for us, and then be able to scale from there.
Awesome. Perfectly said. I really appreciate you coming on. It's awesome to see this unique initiative be rolled out, but it seems like a lot of the small wins, it's gradual. It's a long game. Like you had said, this being early on, it seems like it can only be so great in the future to help patients in the community and encourage other pharmacists and other professionals to understand that there is value here and coming together is really the key to among a variety of other things. It's really awesome to see. We'll definitely keep an eye on it and obviously wish you nothing but the best in growing it and reaching more patients in the community. I really appreciate you taking the
Yeah,
time out of
thanks.
your day to join us.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll come back next year and report on how we did.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Kevin.
That's what's up. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.